The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 228.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome someone to the Rebel Capitalist Show. She is a great friend of mine and someone I've really looked forward to interviewing. She really needs no introduction, but her name is Kim Kiyosaki. Kim, welcome to the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Oh, thank you, George. And I still consider myself a rebel capitalist. So I'm so happy to be here and really honored to be on your program.
That's right. So we were just talking kind of off camera about Tucson and the lockdowns and how this, what's happened in 2020 and 21 is going to potentially affect the real estate markets and the local economies. You know, what's interesting is back prior to this happening, that was always considered one of the safest bets in real estate. Remember that? Yes. Like college apartments or housing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that guaranteed economy completely done. Yep. So, and I know you've really got your finger on the pulse of real estate because of the investing that you do with Robert and Ken McElroy. So number one, what are you guys seeing in the real estate landscape? And then number two, are you seeing any potential opportunities? Maybe you've got a watch list of some things that might get cheap because of the blood in the street, so to speak.
Yeah, it really, the whole landscape, all the rules have changed dramatically. And when you talk about the college towns, we were talking earlier, these college towns, all these small businesses that rely on the universities and the colleges, and they're out of business. It's just devastating what's happening. So what we're seeing, and I know what a lot of people are seeing, is there's this huge migration out and migration into certain areas, certain states. And this is all over the world. This is not just the US, this is all over the world.
Right.
I'll give you a quick example. We were selling my mom's house in Hilton Head, South Carolina. Mm. And this happened this was in July of 2019. So it's been, you know, or 2020. So it was 6 months into the pandemic.
Okay.
And the market before this, her house was worth so much. Well, as soon as there was all this influx of people from the Northeast, from New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, Boston area, all coming to South Carolina, North Carolina, Florida, the price of her house in just that 6 months went up at least by 1/3. Wow. We didn't even have it on the market. It wasn't even on the market. Our realtor was just talking to people, and we had a full price offer within 24 hours of deciding on a price. We pulled it off the market and rethought it again. And then she went out and talked to some of her friends and put a higher price tag on it. And again, 24 hours later, full price, no contingencies. People are looking to get out of these cities and out of these lockdowns. They're buying properties sight unseen.
Right.
Phoenix, where I live right now, is just booming. I've never seen it. So we're at high season. So high season, March, February, March, April, high season for all the snowbirds. Well, this is so much more traffic and so many more people than the typical high season because we've got all the Californians moving in here, as well as other people. But the states that are opening, that are much more, have let go of the regulations,
right,
and are letting people be free, they're the ones that are seeing the opportunity.
So as a professional real estate investor, how do you look for opportunity? Because the debate that I have internally is, yes, prices are going up, but I always like to buy things when they're cheap and sell them when they're expensive. Mm-hmm. And I don't like to chase a market. And we know that prices are at all-time highs, even when you adjust for inflation. Right. So I always say, if we were in a bubble back in 2006, and the prices are even higher today, adjusted for inflation, then by definition, we have to be in a bubble today. So it's tough to go in there and buy a property, just hoping that the price goes up and kind of bet on the capital flow and the population flow. But it's tough to have your money in the bank just sitting there losing value to inflation. So how are you navigating that landscape?
Well, there's a couple things that we're doing. And there always are opportunities, but like in Phoenix, for example, I wouldn't go buy a personal residence right now. The prices are just too high. There's always been the need for senior housing because baby boomers are getting older. So that hasn't changed. We're doing a deal right now with senior housing. But what I think is going to be the real opportunity, if somebody can crack this nut, is, as we know, the commercial market, office space, people have fled the office space. They're not coming back.
Right.
I don't think the office sector will ever be back the way it was. So if you can figure out how to repurpose all those office buildings and all of that office space and turn it into something, people are talking about turning it into affordable housing. I mean, we're going to need affordable housing in many areas, but if you can figure out how to repurpose the office space, that could be a huge opportunity.
Yeah, I know we were having dinner with Kenny the other night, and he was talking about malls.
Yes.
And a great example of that is just the PV mall right there. I mean, great, great area, but it's like a ghost town.
It was just there. I was surprised. Yeah, there's just nothing. Everything is shut down. Stores are closing. Big box stores are closing again. So if you can repurpose the shopping malls, I see a lot of them going to services, restaurants, salons, spas, things like that. That seems to be working as well. One other opportunity I see is, since this pandemic, is that everybody wants everything delivered.
Yeah, right.
So if you can find warehousing space where companies will come and warehouse their goods and services, or their goods anyway, we've been looking at that as well. We've been looking in Georgia. We've been looking at the ports, like the Port of Georgia. I think we're too late to that party already. And we thought we got there pretty early, and that was about almost a year ago. And we're almost too late then, but that's going to be another opportunity for warehousing, delivery services, things like that, where to store all those goods. So it's like Amazon just bought Whole Foods.
Right.
Well, did they buy Whole Foods for Whole Foods, or did they buy it because now they have a distribution system?
That's right.
All across the US.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I've recently gone back and tried to do a lot of research on the Spanish flu just for personal freedom issues, because obviously nothing like what we've seen in 2020 or 2021 has happened in our lifetime. So we just assume that it's completely unprecedented. And I try to use critical thinking and the scientific process to the degree which you can, and try not to get emotional about it and say, okay, well, is this really unprecedented? Let's go back and see what happened in 1918 as far as mask mandates, as an example. And you see that there were just as draconian measures. The big difference back then, though, is they were never mandated by the state. They left it, or the federal government, they left it up to each individual mayor. So it was far more decentralized as far as the decision-making process. And then I thought through, okay, well, we went into the 1920s, but we didn't have a big shift in, let's say, consumer behavior. But you didn't have the internet. You didn't have Zoom back then. You didn't have Skype. So it's a fascinating question to try to figure out if there would have been a Zoom back in 1920, would there have been a shift like there is today? You know, the question is, I don't know, maybe, but it really tries to get you, it really promotes the thinking for what's going to happen in 2023, 2025, and, you know, 2030 and beyond, to try to figure out how things have changed for good and what the landscape is going to be to try to take advantage of that.
That's a great point, because look at, you've got Facebook, you've got Twitter, you've got YouTube, and we personally have been censored on all of those platforms because we spoke out against the COVID requirements, and we spoke out against masks, and we talked about the vaccines and things like that. And having that, I mean, how much has that played into this whole fear? People are scared to death. They look at individuals as weapons against them.
Right. Yeah, right.
So that's a great question. What if Facebook and YouTube, what if that wasn't here and people weren't getting swayed in their thinking or told only one point of view, they actually could think for themselves.
And you know, it's interesting, back during that time frame, the media was doing the complete opposite. I was reading that the media was actually trying to convince people that it didn't exist.
Oh, interesting.
That it wasn't a big deal.
To not scare them?
Just because I don't know the rationale. They just, maybe that was the political message I don't know how much pull the politicians had back then, but maybe they're like, hey, listen, we don't want this to be a big deal because this is going to crush the economy. So, hey, mm-hmm. media, let's just tell people that it's not a big deal, or let's downplay this. Where instead today, obviously, a lot of people would say that they're overplaying it, that they're really taking it over the top and they're sensationalizing it and cherry picking specific data and whatnot. But it seems like they did the complete opposite back then. And but that's a very good point, because see, I was thinking about what if Zoom or Skype didn't exist or did exist back then. But you're talking about the echo chamber from a social standpoint of the Twitters, the Facebooks, and because people like things on Facebook that they are sympathetic to, then Facebook feeds them more and more and more of that content. Therefore, they get that echo chamber of only what they want to hear. And it's like going to a courtroom and only hearing the plaintiff or only hearing the defendant.
That's a great point, because if you've ever been in a lawsuit or something like that, and you read the side against you, they're like, I'm like, wow, that sounds really good. Really bad people.
That's a
great point. That is a great point.
Yeah.
I think one of the, I mean, I feel like, you know, and rebel capitalist is what a great title, because I feel like we're fighting for our constitutional rights right now. So people say, well, are you Republican or Democrat? And I've always been independent, but I am pro our constitution. I am pro capitalism. I am pro free markets. And I want to make sure that we keep those.
That's right. And Kim, I think people forget why that's important. And I've been giving this a lot of thought lately. You know my personal story, but a lot of people know, and maybe they don't know, that I went from Arizona to Puerto Rico, and Puerto Rico is like a police state right now. I mean, there's literally police on every single corner with guns, making sure that you're not only wearing a mask outside, but with, you know, over your nose. And I want to be very clear. It's not like I'm against masks. If you want to wear a mask, go nuts. Yep. I'm against mask mandates. I'm against the government telling you what to do. And so I've been just going down this road of, you know, kind of where's the most personal freedom that I can find in my life. So that's what's kind of brought me to Florida. But, you know, one thing I'd like to ask you before we go down that path is, what are you doing right now in your own life to facilitate more personal freedom in this world? It seems like it's closing in on you all the time, because you're someone with tremendous resources. And but I want people to understand that this affects you just as much as it affects everyone else.
It does. Oh, it totally does. And that we're going down that same path as to where can we find the most freedom. And we actually do have a place that we bought years ago, and it is a very small community. And one of the things about this community that we like is it has one of the largest sporting clays courses. So everybody that lives there knows how to shoot.
Number one.
So I think that's important. Everybody is armed and they know how to shoot. We're also, we're still, you know, we buy gold and silver because we don't know what's going to happen with the money. We don't know. I don't think the Fed knows. I don't think the central banks know. I don't think most people, I don't think the people who are making decisions really know what is going to come from all of this. So we are buying gold and silver. We're experimenting with Bitcoin. Buy a little bit of Bitcoin to see where that is. One of the ways that Robert and I learn best, George, is if we want to learn about something, we put a little money into it.
Right.
So if we want to learn about Bitcoin, we buy some Bitcoin to find out. And that gets my interest up. Because if I put $10 into something, I'm going to be more interested than if I'm not involved at all. Yeah. So we always go out and buy things like that. We're still buying real estate. We still think that's a good play. If we do go down this road with the Biden administration or Harris administration, I think property taxes are going to be going up dramatically. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at ways to thwart that. Now, what else I'm finding out, this is very interesting. So our tax specialist, Tom Wheelwright, he reads all the tax code and he reads all of the new legislation and all the new initiatives, and not everything has been passed. But it's clear that where this administration is going is towards green energy.
You're right.
So there's going to be a lot of opportunity in solar, wind, carbon credits, things like that. So we're looking at that. There will be tax incentives where I think there's going to be a shift away from, they're already talking about getting rid of fracking, getting rid of the small business people so the large corporations can come take that. But I think green energy is going to be a good investment in the future. Yeah. Whether you agree with it or not, there's things that we're looking at right now that do fit our philosophy and that we are aligned to, because we'll never invest in something just because it's there to make money. It's got to speak to our values as well.
One of the things we talk about in Rebel Capitalist Pro, that service I have with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, is ways to play the green energy movement without mm-hmm. having to go long green energy itself, not necessarily from a philosophical standpoint, but because a lot of those companies just don't make profit.
Yeah.
And I like to buy a dollar for 50 cents, not buy a hope and a prayer and a dream and a business model for $3, hoping it goes to $5. So anyway, Lynn and Chris are the pros in there, and they always look at commodities, because as an example with copper, if we go down this path with EVs and solar and whatnot, the world is going to need like 10 times more copper than it has right now. And it's not like you can just flip the switch and all of a sudden produce more copper. That takes sometimes decades to get that stuff out of the ground. So that may be one way to buy something that's a little more of a hard asset, if you will, that's maybe got some fundamentals behind it, instead of just going that other direction.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because that's why we think silver, there's going to be a big play on silver. We think that that's going to go up for the exact same reason. They're going to need it. They're going to need to use it. And there's only so much of it available.
Yeah. Another thing, I don't know if I told you this, but I had lunch yesterday with Snyder, with Jeff Snyder.
Oh, okay. Oh, great.
And one of the things that you can imagine what that lunch was like. I mean, it's funny because it's like having lunch with you and Robert too. There's about 30 seconds of small talk. Oh, how are you doing? But then you just dive right into the macro or investing or real estate or making money or entrepreneurship, personal freedom, et cetera. Same thing with Snyder. And he and I, of course, started talking about the Fed and quantitative easing. And I'm going to write this down here so I remember something I wanted to talk to you about. But in the repo market, and Snyder is in the deflation camp. I know you follow that debate quite extensively. The difference between the deflationists like Brent Johnson, like Dr. Lacey Hunt, like Snyder, and then the inflation camp, maybe Luke Grohman, Lynn Alden, or obviously Schiff. Schiff is always in the inflation camp, our buddy Peter Schiff. But what's interesting is Snyder, even though he's on that deflation side, I was asking him if he owns gold personally. And what's interesting about Jeff is he very rarely ever talks about what he personally buys. I don't know if I've ever heard him talk about that on a podcast. And he says, absolutely, I own gold. And then we were there with Jason Hartman. And Jason says, okay, Jeff, well, if you're on the deflation camp, why are you buying gold? That seems counterintuitive. And he says, because our global monetary system at some point in time has to end. It has to reset, for lack of a better word. But this is a house of cards. And although I think it's going to be a deflationary bust, regardless, we've got to get from point A to point B, because there's going to be a new system, and that's going to be a very messy process, and it's going to get real, real ugly. And he says, I might not want to own gold right now for the deflation argument, but I do want to own as much as possible for that time frame between point A and point B.
Yes, that's exactly why we don't buy it for the short term. We're buying it for the long term, and we couldn't agree more. We were just listening to a discussion on QE, quantitative easing, and what's happening there. And this gentleman was saying how he does see deflation coming because there are people aren't spending money. I mean, people are they've got more money than they've ever had before because of the PPP and all of this, but they're not spending it. They're not out shopping because the stores were all closed. So they've kept all this money. So he was thinking that there would be deflation. And the way Robert and I look at it, it could be deflation, but then move into inflation.
Right, right.
But we agree that the market, the monetary system at some point we do believe is going to collapse. I think it would have collapsed a long time ago had it not been for QE and all the printing of money and putting so much money into the economy. Which of course propped up the stock market, but we see the same thing.
Yeah, and it made it worse. It, according to Snyder, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think he would suggest that it would have collapsed in 2008 if it wasn't for the intervention of the central planners. And you say, well, it's a good thing, but again, that's kicking the can down the road. There's no free lunch, and we're just giving the heroin addict more monetary heroin, which is not a good thing. That's a bad thing. You know, I'd love for you to go into the backstory of what you guys did back in the early 90s and how you came up with Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's such a fascinating story that, and most people, I don't think they know that it was a board game first. And then you were looking for a way to market the board game, and you had a different title for the book. And then that was kind of just this random coincidence that I think you met someone in Australia, something like that, and they convinced you to rename it. And all these things kind of fell into place. And I think the entrepreneurs out there would really enjoy kind of the Reader's Digest version of that story.
I'll give you the real short version. So it was in 1994 that Robert and I were financially free. And when people hear that, they think that we've, you know, have a lot of money in the bank and we've got all the savings, or we've sold our company for a lot of money, or we have a huge stock portfolio. We didn't have any of that. We very simply had $10,000 a month, every month coming in to our household from our investments, mostly in our assets, mostly real estate, primarily real estate. So we had $10,000 coming in, but only $3,000 in living expenses. We had all our money invested in our business and all the other money invested in real estate. So at that point, we were financially free.
Right.
And everybody kept asking, how'd you do it? How'd you do it? How'd you do it? And so we're like, well, we could just travel and do all these seminars all over the world and explain what we did and how we bought all these assets, and the assets put money in your pocket and have your money work hard for you instead of you working hard for your money. But instead we thought, wouldn't it be fun if we could create a game? Because we love games. Both Robert and I love games. And what if we could create a board game, of which we've never done before, that taught the principles and the philosophy and the strategy of what we did to go from the rat race to being financially free. Mm-hmm. So we created this board game called Cash Flow. And we were all about cash flow. Cash flow is what we are. And the board game today is it's still our number one initiative, is our cash flow board game. Because what happened is, I won't go into the whole story here, but we discovered, because a journalist was doing a story from the New York Times on the cash flow game, we discovered that we had thousands, 3,500 once we counted, of these cash flow clubs all over the world where people got together and would play the cash flow game and teach one another. So it was people teaching people. And at that point, we're like, it works. And we're very, very excited. But as we were creating as we created the board game and we produced 1,000 games, Robert started working on a brochure to promote the cash flow game. And he kept working on it. And lo and behold, this little brochure became this book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Mm, wow.
And so from the entrepreneur point of view, because the purpose of an entrepreneur is to solve problems. And the problem we saw was that there was no financial education in the school system worldwide.
Right.
So we set out to solve that problem. And so Rich Dad, Poor Dad came out, and it was just a wonderful success. We were on Oprah in 2002, and that took us to 150 countries because she was syndicated there. But in the process, we were in Australia doing some seminars, and a friend of ours who's a marketing guy came up, and our company at the time was called Cashflow Technologies. And we were all about cash flow. And he said to us, he goes, you know, the only thing people think about when they hear cash flow is cash flowing out of your pocket. And I'm like, well, that's
right. Cash flowing into my pocket.
Yes, it goes in, not out. And so everything was about cash flow, the name of the company. And he goes, your brand is not cash flow. And I'm like, yes, it is, because everything we talk about, and it's our game, and it's what we do, and it's what we teach. He goes, what's your most popular product? And I said, the book Rich Dad Poor Dad. And he goes, your brand is Rich Dad.
All right.
Because everybody knows it. And as soon as he said it, it's like that aha moment. We're like, of course it is. And so that's when we shifted everything, and we became the Rich Dad Company, and everything was about Rich Dad, and then subsequent products to that. So sometimes I know when I'm on mission, the right people show up at the right time. Yeah. And when I'm on purpose, the right people show up at the right time. And so, as I said today, it's still all about the cash flow game, but I think we're up to about 40 million Rich Dad Poor Dad books sold worldwide. And I'll tell you, this is amazing, George. This last year probably sold more Rich Dad Poor Dads and more cash flow games than we ever have in years past.
Good.
I like to think that people, even though they're locked down or they're in their homes, they are still, they're studying, they're learning, they want to improve their lives. So that was really a breath of fresh air when I heard that.
Yeah, well, that's definitely the glass half. That's something to be optimistic about and excited about, that maybe out of this craziness, we get a lot of people who are taking control of their financial destiny, if you will, by educating themselves as to what they can do to maybe have financial freedom themselves. So, you know, I don't know if I ever told you, but you know how much time I spend down in Colombia. Mm-hmm. And when I first got there in like 2015, I was going to the local grocery store. And I remember, you know how they sell the books kind of when you're like going through the checkout stand, like next to the gum and the beef sticks and whatnot. And I remember seeing your book right there, but it's in Spanish. So it was like Rico Padre, like Cobre.
I love it. And I have to say, you know, it's been really heartwarming, because when we were just up in Park City, Utah, and we had so many people. I mean, we barely got out of the car, and this group of three young guys come over and say, oh my God, Rich Dad Poor Dad changed my life. We've had a lot of people say, because of the philosophies, because they followed the philosophies of Rich Dad Poor Dad and cash flow, that they are okay in this pandemic. They're okay because they've got their money working for them. They've got their assets, they've got their cash flow. And I'm not saying our way is the right way. It's just another point of view. It's a different way of looking at money and looking at investing, but it makes me, that keeps us going. You know, that's what drives us, when people actually put it into practice and it really helps them and their family.
That is incredibly powerful, isn't it? Well, you've been an incredibly successful entrepreneur for many years, many decades. And just from knowing you and Robert well, I can tell everyone that's watching this right now, Robert's a good entrepreneur. Kim is a great entrepreneur. Kim really makes a lot of the strategic decisions, and she really makes it happen. So what type of advice would you give people who are trying to become more entrepreneurial today, because they're scared that, you know, they don't know if their job is going to be there in the future? There's just a lot of uncertainty, to say the least. So they want to take more control over their financial future, like we talked about. What type of strategies, like actionable advice, are you giving them now based on your experience?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I do think the future still is entrepreneurs, and it is still small business. And we will do everything that we can to make sure that that stays that way. Yeah. That small business is still the heart and soul of the US and of other countries. I think one of the keys in starting a business for me is that I've never started a business, and I've started several. It was never about money first. I didn't start a business to make money. And I know a lot of small business people, and they start the business because they want to make money. But then what happens is, of course, you're going to run into problems, because as an entrepreneur, especially if you're doing it for the first time, you're going to have setbacks. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to have big learnings. And if you're doing it only for the money, then you're going to quit, because right. It's not a strong enough reason to keep going. So just a couple of years ago, I actually took back the company from people that were running it. And the main reason was because Robert and I have always been very mission-based. The mission of the Rich Dad Company is to elevate the financial well-being of humanity. That's always been our drive. The company became money-focused. Money was number one.
Right.
And not surprisingly, there wasn't a lot of new business happening, wasn't a lot of new products happening. So we took it back and brought the mission back to number one. So I think that's a key is what is the reason why you're doing this business? And another thing, I think people overthink it sometimes. It's not that, oftentimes that idea is like right in front of you, like you're living in it. I tell the story of the woman who loved designer handbags, and her friends would borrow her designer handbags. And finally, one day she got the idea of, well, what if I could rent them out? And she went online, started renting out her handbags. Then she started renting out costume jewelry. And so it doesn't have to be too complicated. You don't have to overthink it. And the other piece of it is you've got to start. You just got to take small steps and start, and not get analysis paralysis, not worry about, you know, getting the right furniture for your office. Yeah. But just start. And it's so much easier today with the internet. I mean, when we started, okay, you're gonna love this story. This is the entrepreneur. We had Rich Dad Poor Dad. And back then in 1997, when we launched the book, there was no internet worldwide, and there was definitely no Zoom. So the only way, and there was no such thing as really a way to get a database built
right.
online. So we had a little ad in the back of Rich Dad Poor Dad, and it said, if you send in $5 for shipping and handling, we will send you this free cassette tape. It was a cassette tape, a free cassette tape on such and such. And that is how we got the names of people who bought the book. So it's like, it's just
what you had to do to build an email list, basically.
That's how we built our database. Yep, that's how we did it. Because you don't know who buys your book at a bookstore, and they don't tell you. So a lot of times it's just common sense. I have a business degree, but I really learned nothing in college about business, about being an entrepreneur. You don't need the degree. You just need a good idea and a lot of a drive and determination. And start small. Just start small. Start part-time. Just start. I'll tell you one other story that I like. A friend of mine, she has a business called Fairy Tale Brownies. And when she was starting out, very just in the garage, she had a full-time job. She went around and she took her brownies to out on the street and to offices. And she said, here, try my brownies and see what you think. And she just went door to door, knocking on doors. And what do you like? What don't you like? And just did her own little market research. It didn't cost her much money to do that. It cost her time and it cost her some brownies. But again, it's fun. Entrepreneurship is so fun and it's very creative. And just know you're going to make a lot of mistakes, but the mistakes are how we learn and how we grow. So the mistakes just show you something you didn't know, very simply.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
Why do you think it's so hard for people to take action and to just start? That's really the most difficult thing that I've seen for people, is they just kind of get into a rut where they're working their 9-to-5 gig. They've got a couple kids, they've got the dog, they've got soccer practice, they've got the husband, the wife, the family, whatever. And it's just this routine that they get in and they're like, oh, well, I want it, but then they don't have time. And then it's just, they kind of procrastinate and then it just never happens. And they just make excuse after excuse after excuse as to why they should stay in their rut, just because it kind of makes them feel good. Yeah. But that, in my experience, that's really people's biggest problem, is just getting the initiative to take action. But why is that so difficult for humans?
That's a great question. I mean, that's the same with investing. I mean, they're just so afraid. And they're, I think, you know, part of this COVID thing, for a lot of people, it's become an emergency. And money, financially, all of that, it's an emergency. And the root word of the word emergency is emerge. So I think for a lot of people, this could be a great opportunity to go, oh my God, maybe I need to do something different. Because I think the reason people don't take action is because they're too comfortable.
Right.
It's too easy not to. And until somebody becomes uncomfortable, then it's when they become uncomfortable that they start looking for new ideas and new solutions. But as long as, you said, they've got the 9-to-5 job and they've got the kids and they've got this, it really takes a lot of drive. But that's why I say just start small. You know, for investing, go out and buy a 1-ounce silver coin. It'll cost you, what, $20, $30 today, $28, $30 US. Mm. But you have it, and then you start getting interested in going online and looking at the price and looking at stories about it. And you start becoming this quasi expert on silver just because you put a little money down. Yeah. And you can do that with entrepreneurship too. But again, you don't have to quit your day job. You can start part-time, but I think, I don't know how you get somebody to have that drive.
You know what I like about what you said, Kim, is just by starting small, is because I think if people can get a taste of success, then that acts as a big motivator, you know, because people, they see the world of entrepreneurship or investing or what you do or what I do or Robert or Kenny or anything, and they think it's just completely unattainable. Yes. Well, that's just what Kim Kiyosaki does. I could never do anything like that. But if they go out there and buy some silver or do, you know, have a little XYZ business and sell a couple things online, even that first sale, we're like, wow, someone actually bought something I created. And then, you know, that kind of drives them to do more and more and more to where then they do have that entrepreneurial mindset that maybe you have or I have or Robert or Kenny or any of those people. And, you know, that's one thing that I always tell people that are interested in real estate investing, because a lot of people want to do what I've done in the past or in Medellin, you know, where I buy these properties and I remodel them and keep them in a rental portfolio or flip them or do whatever. And I say, you know what I'd suggest doing is go out and do it with a couple cars. Hmm. Because the process is identical. What you have to do is you have to buy low, you have to find a motivated seller, you have to know your market, you have to do comps. And then what you have to do is you have to buy that vehicle and then you have to fix it up. So you've got to hire vendors, you got to get a mechanic, you got to get a paint shop, let's say, you got to have an auto body guy, you got to have this and this and this. And then you got to manage those subcontractors. Exactly like you're managing subs, building an apartment complex or buying an apartment complex or something, or remodeling it, you know, refurbishing it. And then you've got to go out there and you've got to market your car. You've got to take amazing pictures of it. You've got to write this eBay ad and you're buying at a local level from a motivated seller. And then you're selling at a national level, a much bigger market to hopefully motivated buyers. And you're presenting it well and you're showing it from all the right angles. But if you think about the process, it's identical. If someone goes out and does that with a 1995 Ford pickup truck for $5,000. They sell it for $10,000. That process is identical to what I do with real estate in Medellin and what you guys do with Kenny and a lot of aspects with the real, some of the real estate deals that you've done with apartment complexes. But the thing with those people is they can do it by just risking $5,000. Yeah. Instead of having to take their life savings and learn the process and this, going through the school of hard knocks with their entire life savings. What do you think about that?
I think that is absolutely, I love that idea. I love that idea because we always say start small. Do not take your life savings and put it into anything unless you have some experience and some knowledge. That's why in real estate, I started with a little two bedroom, one bath house. And I had to come up with $5,000. It's exactly the number. And I didn't have it. And I'll tell you, not having the money, this is another thing I want to make a point of. People say, oh, I'll invest when I have the money, or I'll start a business when I have the money. Well, we never have the money because there's always an emergency somewhere. Something always takes our money. So not having the money, and I didn't have the money probably for the first 10 deals I did, right. But it made me very creative and very entrepreneurial to figure out how to get the money. Because once I saw that this little two bedroom, one bath house, it had a little butterfly sculpture out on the front and it was very pretty. It had blue trim. It was beautiful. I wanted it. Mm. I wanted it. And I had to figure out how to get the money to do it. And we did some creative things. One thing we did is we had our business was just starting at this point. This was before Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Right.
So we put out a PR piece and said, we're going to sell this product and it'll be out in 3 months. So if you'd like it now, we'll prepay and you'll get it for this price instead of this price. Mm. So these people prepaid and then we had our $5,000 and then we delivered our product. So there's a lot of ways that you can put this thing to use is great. But starting small to me is the key. You talk to Kenny, you talk to anybody who is in real estate successfully today, they started small. Kenny started with a little two bedroom apartment.
Yeah. That's
Robert right. started with a little condo in Maui. At the time, it cost him, I think, $10,000 on credit cards. But that's the most important. He put it all on credit cards. No money down.
Yeah.
But I think that's crucial because what you're doing is you're starting small, but you're putting, that's where you learn. Mm. And you're going to make the mistakes. Always start small and just learn and then put what you learn into use. If I started, holy mackerel, if I started with a 100-unit apartment building, I'd have lost everything because I had no idea what I was doing then. But at least on a little two bedroom, one bath house, I could make mistakes and they weren't going to cost me a lot of money.
Yeah. Kim, if you had to start all over today and I gave you $100,000, what would you do?
I love real estate. I love real estate. I would find real estate deals. I would go to places. I would look at the trends. What are the trends that are happening? Where is it happening? One of the trends right now is home businesses. I mean, not home businesses, but home goods like Home Depot and Lowe's, and people are doing their own fixer uppers, do it yourself. And there's markets out there. I would go find markets. I would find a market that's depressed, that has opportunity. They're there. You just got to look.
What areas?
And I would probably start a business. I would figure out to a business that out of this whole, looking at what's coming down the future, I would look at what is needed and wanted that people are not doing.
Would you try to focus that business online because the cost of getting started is so much lower?
I think so. And we don't know how people are going to come out of this thing. Are they going to be scared to death for the next 10 years? Are they going to be open and face-to-face? And online now, I think that's one of the advantages that came out of this whole thing is the whole Zoom. Okay. I don't have to get on a plane and fly to Florida to be interviewed by George Gammon. I can do it on Zoom. Right. And I can do like 5 of these a day instead of 1 a week. So I think the online world is going to have a huge opportunity for entrepreneurs.
One thing I always say about an online business is you can make so many more mistakes and you can just throw like 10 things up against a wall and just see what sticks mm-hmm. because it costs you, let's say $500 or $1,000 to start that business, that blog, that YouTube channel, that website where you're creating content, delivering value, doing affiliate marketing or selling your own product, something like that. where before, I mean, the last business I started, well, when I started in 2000, five-ish, right around there, it was a brick and mortar type of business that had a service, and I had to put up my life savings. I had to borrow another $400,000 just to set this thing up and have a little bit of runway there. And you're not even profitable. And then you hope you got enough capital and reserve to last you the 6 months before you turn a little bit of a profit, and you're not paying yourself and all these things. And ironically, that business became profitable and did well, but it didn't do any better than some of these hugely successful YouTube channels or a thing that were started with $500 and like a cell phone. And a lot of people, I think, get that paralysis analysis because they don't know what to, should I do brownies? Should I do classic cars? Should I talk about this? Okay, just do all of them and see which one people like, and then go from there. And they have the opportunity to do that now because the cost barrier of entry is very low. The time barrier is still the same, but the cost barrier is a lot lower.
Yeah, absolutely. We did a small course once. It was online, and it was about how to set up a business and how to start your business. And people could not figure out, well, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? We're like, just pick something, just pick a product, and you're going to sell it online. Just any, it doesn't matter what it is, because this is just learning. You're just learning. But to your point about getting a car and selling the car and fixing it up and all of that, it was the same process. It's like, just pick a product. You're going to learn about inventory. You're going to learn about selling. You're going to learn about all of these management, finance. You're going to learn all of this, but just pick something and start, because just consider it, this is like your education, your entrepreneurship education. I think that is really good. And I'll say, when we started the Rich Dad Company, we had a little bit of money that we put to buy, to manufacture 1,000 games. We did not have a big market. We had no marketing plan. We built these games. And the only plan we had is, we knew, because we had a seminar company before that, we taught entrepreneurship. Mm. We knew that we could create a 500 person seminar in Singapore, which we did. And everybody would buy one game. That was part of the cost of the seminar. And they played the game there. That was one of the first places we played it. So we kind of had a built-in way to get our money back, but we didn't have any long drawn out formal plan. We're like, we just need to do it step by step, take it little by little. Online was huge for us. But yes, to your point, there's so much opportunity out there, but you just got to start. And just, it doesn't, the first business doesn't have to be anything, you know, monumental.
One thing I've noticed, at least from all the entrepreneurs that I've known in my life, they seem to have this natural inclination to shoot first and ask questions later.
Exactly.
Have you noticed that as well?
That's the people I know. Yeah, let's do it. Okay. Now what? I don't know. I don't. Let's
just
figure it out.
You kind of figure it out as you go.
That's the fun of it. That's the fun of it. And to that point too, you know, you talked about trying all these different things because you're so good at this. Every action a person takes, any action has feedback. Smile at somebody, somebody smiles back. That's feedback. You punch somebody, somebody punches you back. That's feedback. You put a product online with a sales blurb and nobody responds, that's feedback. And you go, okay, they didn't respond. Let's change it. Let's do this. Let's do that. And I think that's part of the fun of entrepreneurship. It's like a puzzle and you keep figuring it out, and there's a lot of experts out there. And I would say, find the real experts, not the fake experts. The real experts are people that do what you want to do, not just talk about it. George is a real expert because he does what he talks about. But there's a lot of people out there that talk about it, but they've never done it. So find real experts that you can learn from and learn the mistakes that they've made. I mean, I have my bookshelves are filled with business books, entrepreneurship. I love marketing. That's my forte. I love marketing. But it's just a game.
Yeah. You know, I see a lot of people that, and I think one of the things that gets them stuck in the mud is they try to plan out like the next 5 years? Okay, I'm going to start this business and then I'm going to do this. I'm going to set up my LLC and I'm going to get this lawyer and I'm going to have all these accountants and then I'm going to do it here. And then I'm going to start a website and do this and this and this and this. And I'm going to talk about this. And they try to just do all this planning and planning and planning instead of taking action. And one of the things that I think was a huge benefit to learn early on in my entrepreneurial career is that you can do all the planning in the world. And it's like that Mike Tyson saying, everyone's got a plan until they get punched in the face.
I love that. Yes.
And I learned very early as an entrepreneur that you're going to get punched in the face about a week after you start. Mm-hmm. So there's no point in doing all this planning because I guarantee you in 2 weeks, you're going to change the plan. So why not just start and go with the flow and then just change it? Have you had that same, those same types of experiences?
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. So my least favorite question anybody ever asked me, even when I was, before I was an entrepreneur, is what's your 5-year plan?
Oh,
like, I don't know what I'm right going to do. With you. I don't know what I'm going to do next week. I don't 5-year exactly. plan, you know, and nothing goes the way it's supposed to.
Exactly.
We used to teach about the moon landing, how often that rocket ship was on track was like 3% of the time. 97% of the time it was off track. Yeah,
wow.
It's correct.
Huh.
And that's the world of entrepreneurship, is you correct. And look at today. I mean, I don't know when my next international trip will be because I don't know what the rules are going to be, where I go and what I want to do. But yeah, it's that I see. I think that's the fun of it, is because you also have to, when I talked about people are too comfortable, you also have to get comfortable with making mistakes and get comfortable with not knowing what's going to come next. And one of the things I think stops a lot of people, George, is they listen to their friends or they listen to family members who have this tape of, oh no, get a good job. That's security. That's safety with the 401k. No, yeah. don't go out on your own. Don't do your own thing. No, that's too risky. You're going to lose everything. I think people listen to that way too much. And at some point you're just going to have to say, I don't know how you deal with that, but you just have to say, I'm going to go do this. This is what I want to do. This is for me, freedom and security is having my own business.
Yeah. It creates that uncertainty.
Yeah.
And it just gets people just stuck to where they can't do anything other than what they've done the last 10 or 20 years. I remember when I was in college, everyone would always harp on that question. You know, what's your 5-year plan? Oh, George, when you get out of school or whatever, you got to have a 5-year plan. And I almost flunked out of high school, as most people know, but I barely kind of just drifted through a little college when I got out of high school. But, you know, they always talk about this 5-year plan. And so I thought it was like a really big deal because back then you listened to adults and you listened to everyone else around you. But then what I started to notice as I got into the world of entrepreneurship and starting my own business is every, let's call it 3-year point. If I would have gone back 3 years and told myself that I'd be doing what I was doing at the time, I wouldn't have believed it. Yeah. Like if you would have told me 3 years ago that, oh, George, you're going to have this YouTube channel and you're going to be interviewing Kim Kiyosaki and you're going to have, you know, Rebel Capitals Live and you're going to have this podcast, and I would have said, you're absolutely out of your mind. There's no way that's going to happen. And that, let's say that was 2018. And if you would have gone back to 2015, that's when I first went to Medellin, and would have said, oh, George, you're going to invest in all this real estate. You're going to do this. You're going to have a whole team here of 30 people. You're going to do your own TV show in Medellin, although you don't speak Spanish. I'd say that you're absolutely out of your mind. So I came to that conclusion in the early 2000s. And that's when I just said, you know what? Screw the plan. I'm not going to have a plan because it's pointless, because I'm going to be doing something that I can't even imagine 3 years from now. Have you had that same type of experience? Yeah.
Yes, because here's what I found is if I got focused on a plan, I've never been a good planner. That's just not my nature. But when I do have a plan and I'm really like focused and stuck to the plan, I miss so many opportunities.
Right. There you go.
You know, and somebody will say, oh, well, we're going to this talk tonight on such and such. Oh, I can't. I got this deadline. I got to get this done because this has to be in by da 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 da. And I miss so today, I am so much more, maybe more present in my daily operations.
Yeah.
I pay attention to when there's a phone call or when something, somebody comes knocking at the door. And I find it grows much faster when it grows organically versus me trying to force something to happen. And my friend JW said to me once, he said, don't be so attached to the outcome. Because I was going into a big meeting. He said, don't be so attached to the outcome. See what comes out of it. Kind of put your outcome, you know, you have things you want to say, but kind of put that on the side and see what evolves out of this meeting. And sure enough, the ideas that came out of this meeting were so much better than any outcome I ever envisioned.
Right.
So I'm not a good, and if you are have a plan, if I do have a plan, it's pretty general. It's more macro plan than detailed. Cause I don't know what people are going to show up. I don't know who's going to, when I restructured our company, the people who were with us, I'm like, I don't know if this is the right group. I don't know how they're going to do it. By me getting out of the way and letting their genius come out, so much more effective, so much more productive, so much smarter than I ever could be. So I think things have to organically evolve at some point as well.
I'm very similar. And I'm going to bring up a topic that's something I struggle with, to see how, maybe if you struggle with as well, maybe some solutions you have. So this is going to be a selfish question here, but how do you keep from getting shiny object syndrome? Because I'm so ADD, but as an entrepreneur, you just see opportunity in everything. Like, oh my gosh, I could make money doing that and that, and that, and that, and that, and that. And then you kind of lose focus. And you don't do anything well, you know, what your core competency is. So how do you juggle that, you know, not having that plan, but also not getting shiny object syndrome?
That's a great question. I do have a thing that I do now, because I also tend to procrastinate is part of my problem as well. Like I get all excited about something and I start it, but then it kind of fizzles out. So one thing I do is I commit to something that has a deadline and holds me accountable because it's going to affect other people if I don't do it.
Mm.
So for example, as we were doing the cash flow game, we just revamped it a little bit, and we had a deadline for when it was going to come out, and people were depending on it to come out at that time because they were promoting it. And I knew that if I didn't get it out at that time, then these people were going to lose money and they were going to lose business. So I set it up to publicly have to perform, and it keeps me focused on that part of the business.
You're right.
Same with real estate. You know, it keeps me, I mean, we get calls all the time for new opportunities,
right?
And I don't have time to look at all of them. But we, and I also have a team that is really good at that. But I have to stay focused on what to me is important. So I know these are the three things that are important to me. And so I do this commitment thing. Okay, what's the deadline? When are we going to get it done? We're about to launch a very big cash flow club initiative globally that will support all the cash flow clubs with educational resources and materials. And we have a deadline and we have a lot of people counting on us to do this. So that keeps me focused on that project. Does that make sense?
It does. It absolutely does. I know we're running short on time here. One thing that I wanted to go over with you and get your take on is this idea that you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm probably butchering that quote or whatever. But I never really gave it much thought until I became an entrepreneur and had some really actually great business partners. And it really energized me and they pushed me to become better. And I think achieve as much potential as I could and as much success as I could with the potential I had at the time. And I even noticed this weekend, it kind of pops into my mind and I notice it now. I'm more aware of it when it's happening. As an example, I was with Hartman and Kenny in West Palm, And we were at a car fashion show where they were showing jets and stuff like that and supercars and, you know, just having fun. We were having drinks and whatnot. But we were, of course, we were talking about business. And we went to a bar after that, talking business. And there were some really great ideas that came out of that, those conversations. And, you know, it just dawns on you, man, that statement is so true. Because when you're hanging around high level people like that, it's just not only is it motivating, it's energizing, but you feed off of that positivity. And then you just bounce ideas back and forth. And you're hanging out with these people that want and have this incredible, insatiable drive to be successful. And whether you like it or not, you're going along with them. I mean, have you experienced that, or what's your take on that?
Yeah, I've experienced that. That you said it very, very well, Joe. I've experienced both sides. So I made a conscious decision many years ago to get the negative people out of my life, because I got enough up in here telling me with my doubts and my hesitations and all that. So I don't need other people telling me why I can or cannot do something. So I really made a conscious decision not to spend time with those people. And if they were, you know, people that I had to see, I spent very little time with them. But we have a group called Rich Dad Advisors, of which you know very well. And these are really some of the smartest people. And they actually are now our board of advisors for the Rich Dad Company. And I'm so blessed, because exactly to that point, they all want to be successful. They all are successful, but they even want to be more successful. And they also want to teach and help other people be successful. That's the most fun. And to be, as you said, to be around high level people with new ideas. I mean, we're all of us, George, we're all lifelong learners. And yeah. I think that's something that we gravitate to other lifelong learners, because we all want to share, we want to learn, we want to get better, we want to grow. And I sometimes get in a rut and I'm like hanging out with the same people. I'm like, well, I gotta go do something. I gotta go to a program or a seminar or go call George Gammon and go fly to Florida and go hang out with people that are going to push me. Exactly what you said. I want to be around people that push me to be better. Yeah. I don't want to be around anybody that's going to say, oh, yes, Kim, yes, Kim, yes, Kim. I want people to question what I'm doing and to call me out on stuff. And I'm a big girl. I can take it. Just tell me the truth. Don't mamby-pamby me. So I want to be around those people. I want to be around intelligent, successful, experienced, knowledgeable people that will tell me the truth.
Yeah, that's right. And you're going to be better off for it. You're going to have more wealth, whether it's personal wealth, financial wealth, come your way. And it just, you know, especially in today.
I think that's a trait of entrepreneurs, is you've got to be able to hear the truth and take it in. It's like when I mentioned feedback, you know, if you have remember the Segway, the Segway machine?
Oh, the mall cops drive around on?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you remember, I remember when they had all this PR about it, all this hype and all this PR, and they were going to announce this machine that was going to change the world and change transportation forever. And they announced, and I watched it, they announced it on the Today Show, I think it was, and they had it covered up and they went, ta-da! And everybody went, what? What? That's it? And what they discovered is these entrepreneurs, their fatal flaw was that they could not take feedback. They were so impassioned by their idea that they didn't listen to any criticism. They didn't listen to any critique. They didn't listen to really good feedback that would have helped them with this idea. So sometimes passion can be blinding. So you've got to be really open as an entrepreneur to all feedback. And the good, the bad, the ugly, all of it, and just take it in. Some it's going to be worthwhile, some it's going to be not worthwhile, but you got to have that kind of that little bit of a thick skin.
Yeah, you do. All right, Kim, I could talk to you for the next 3 hours.
Me too. It's fun, George.
But I know your time is extremely valuable. So thank you very much. For my viewers and listeners who want to find out more about what you're doing right now, where should they go?
Go to richdad.com. They can hear Rich Dad. They'll hear about Rich Woman, so, which of course is my passion, educating and encouraging women in the world of money and investing. So they'll hear all of it.
Awesome.
And they can play the cash flow game online for free.
Okay, and maybe be a part of one of these groups that initiative. Yeah. That sounds really, really cool.
Yeah, we're excited about it.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Kim, and I cannot wait to do this again.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you so much. Really, really such a joy.
Hi, guys. I'd like to invite each and every one of you to join me in Miami this June 11th through the 13th for Rebel Capitalist Live, the investment conference. And this is not over Zoom. This is face-to-face. I'm bringing a lot of your favorites from the Rebel Capitalist Show to Miami under one roof to speak, to give you the knowledge you need to increase your personal freedom, to become a better investor and make larger returns over the next few years when we have this financial uncertainty that's being caused by the Fed and the government. And finally, it's going to give you an opportunity to really take your understanding of macroeconomics and the world around us to the next level. We've got some incredible speakers lined up that are going to completely blow you away. People like Mike Maloney, Jason Hartman, Ken McElroy, Lynette Zhang, Mark Moss, Brent Johnson, Jeff Snyder, just to name a few. The tickets for this event are really going to sell out fast, so make sure you go to Rebel Capitalist Live right now to get all the details and to reserve your spot. We need to come together as a group, as a community, especially after what we dealt with in 2020 and 2021, so we can learn how to build wealth and thrive in a world of out of control central banks and big governments. And we need to do this as a group, as a community of fellow rebel capitalists. So don't waste any time. Head over to rebelcapitalistlive.com and I will see you in Miami.